You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi.
And I'm Katie Frankowitz. Clatsop County is set to distribute $1.6 million in state funds for countywide shelter response, but one shelter says it isn't enough to keep their doors open. Lifeboat Services provides a variety of resources to unhoused people out of its location in downtown Astoria. That includes a 22-bed shelter. The shelter is one of the lowest barrier options for unhoused people in Clatsop County. Under an allocation formula the county developed, Lifeboat is set to receive around $112,000 of the county's cut of state funding for shelter operations. This money is meant to help cover operations beginning July 1st and going through next June. It's about $300,000 less than Lifeboat received for the previous biennium, an amount that itself had represented a significant cut of prior funding for the organization. Lifeboat Executive Director Ozark Orok says Lifeboat doesn't have the option to cut down on the number of days it is open. If they don't commit to maintaining the same level of service, the county won't award the money. But Orok says it will be impossible for Lifeboat to continue to operate the shelter with such low funding. The potential closure comes as Astoria city leaders continue to grapple with concerns over highly visible groups of homeless campers in the downtown area. A new shelter first policy the city is developing hinges on the availability of local shelter options like Lifeboat Services.
But if we are gone, it's going to leave an extremely large hole and gap in the services. And honestly, the tent issue is going to be compounded. There's going to be anywhere from 22 more tents on the streets of Astoria.
If the funding option remains the same from the county, Orok says the shelter will need to close by the end of the month as the organization regroups. Assistant County Manager Monica Steele says the county isn't funded to a level where it can fully fund a single shelter provider. She says Clatsop County encourages providers to pursue multiple funding streams for operations, and that the allocation formula is an effort to equitably fund all providers with what the state gives the county. Given Oregon's ongoing budget challenges, Steele expects state funds for local shelter operations could continue to go down. An arson investigation is underway after firefighters responded to multiple Amazon vans on fire early Monday morning in Portland. Just before 2:30 a.m., Portland Fire and Rescue got a call about a potential brush fire near the Rivian Dealership and Service Center in southwest Portland. Crews at the scene found four Amazon Prime electric vans engulfed in flames. Firefighters worked to keep the fire from spreading and to protect nearby cars, structures, and trees. Officials say the van's rechargeable batteries were a challenge. Crews had to let the battery cells completely consume themselves with fire before being fully put out. There were no reported injuries. Portland Fire and Rescue said the fire was intentionally set, and the incident is being investigated as arson. A judge in Eugene says the fence at the downtown federal building must be removed. KLCC's Nathan Wilk reports.
The federal government fenced off the building's upper courtyard in April after police declared a riot there in January. But local activists are now suing, saying the barrier violates their free speech rights. On Monday, federal judge Mustafa Kasubai said the placement of the fence is too restrictive, and he ordered a preliminary injunction. Plaintiff Naftali Renshaw says she teared up at that decision.
I'm excited to get to bring back our crowds and utilize the free speech clause in the way it was intended to be used per our ancestors in protest in Eugene.
Kasubai gave the government 48 hours to take the fence down, offering guidance about where they could put it back up legally. But the court case isn't over. Plaintiffs are still seeking a permanent injunction. This is Nathan Wilk reporting.
This is local and regional news on KMUN, turning now to news out of Washington State. A Western Washington man is being held pending trial in connection with a plot to attack the White House on the president's birthday. KUOW's Scott Greenstone has more.
21-year-old Belfair resident William Lee Faulkner appeared in federal court in Tacoma Monday. The FBI suspects he was part of an online conspiracy to attack the White House on June 14th during a televised UFC fight. Court documents say Faulkner messaged more than a dozen co-conspirators across the country on the app Telegram. They allegedly planned to fly drones with explosives into the event, shoot Republican lawmakers, and possibly kill the president. No attack ever took place after a member of the group was arrested in Ohio. Faulkner messaged someone on Instagram that, quote, "We all felt something was going wrong." Faulkner's lawyer didn't immediately respond to KUOW's inquiry. No trial date has been set. I'm Scott Greenstone in Seattle.
Legislation meant to make college sports more equitable is gaining momentum in Congress. A Senate committee last week approved the Protect College Sports Act. The bipartisan bill is co-sponsored by Washington Democrat Maria Cantwell. Eastern Washington GOP Congressman Michael Baumgartner supports the U.S. House version of the measure.
It's a system that really can't govern itself, and so it really needs Congress to step in. But I just want to make sure that if there is reform, that it's good for schools like Gonzaga, Eastern Washington University, and Washington State University, and not just solving the problems of Alabama, Michigan, and Ohio State.
Baumgartner says the legislation is designed to stop the richest programs from creating a system where they get all the media attention and money. The proposal would also require athletic programs maintain current levels for rosters and scholarships for women's and Olympic sports. One issue the bill does not address, whether college athletes should be considered school employees in the future. The two biggest college athletic conferences, the SEC and Big Ten, both say they oppose the bill in its current form. The measure now heads to the Senate floor. The House has yet to act on its version of the legislation. School is back in session on the Long Beach Peninsula. After a multi-year disruption brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic, Grays Harbor College has resumed in-person community and continuing education classes at its Ilwaco campus. The decision to reopen coincides with a new administration taking charge. The college has also held public outreach events to reestablish its presence and gauge local interest. Amy Hitchcock, manager of the college's community and continuing education programs, said the new administration's plan revolves around meeting the needs of the communities they're serving. Hitchcock hopes Grays Harbor College will rebuild its faculty and programming in the years to come. For now, people can enroll in community and continuing education courses and workshops, including dog grooming and experiencing Cape Disappointment through art making. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. Local and regional news is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN news team. For more local and regional news, go to kmun.org/news. American Democracy Minute is up next. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Redistricting news today, not for 2026, but for after the midterms. The New York Assembly advanced language for a constitutional amendment ballot measure, making way for it. A newly configured Indiana legislature may reconsider it, and Georgia's legislature opted not to consider it for 2028. The Democratic-majority New York Assembly sent its proposed ballot measure language to the Secretary of State on June 17th. A second Assembly vote plus voter approval is still needed, but it removes prohibitions of mid-decade and partisan redistricting. Like California, New York has an independent redistricting commission, but the legislature draws maps if the commission map fails. The Indiana Citizen reports that pro-voter groups are preparing for a redistricting do-over. Last December, a group of Indiana senators refused President Donald Trump's demand to gerrymander additional GOP congressional seats in Indianapolis and Gary. Several of those senators were primaried and lost Trump-endorsed candidates, setting the stage for a reconsideration next year. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp called a special session which began June 17th and included redistricting congressional districts prior to 2028. In a letter to Kemp, House Speaker John Burns announced the General Assembly would not be drawing new congressional or legislative maps, citing a lack of information and public input. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.